Three Righteous Mamas is a podcast brought to you by The Signal. We are on a mission to transform our country. We tell the stories that matter, celebrate the power and hope of pissed off mamas who are building a better future for all of our children. Hi, I'm Muna Husseini.
And I'm Christina Sansun Ramirez.
And I'm Martha Pincoffs.
For our listeners, we love knowing what you think about our podcast. Please subscribe, leave us a review, and tell us how things are going. And don't forget, you can check out our merchandise on store.threerighteousmamas.com to order your gear now. We love seeing our listeners sporting their gear. And, you know, we've had a lot of conversations over the past couple months, but we decided to actually talk about the moment we became mothers. And that journey looks different for so many people. And I'll kick us off by talking about my first. I think I said on a previous podcast, I wasn't always a big fan of kids. And so when I got pregnant, it was like a conversation with my husband where I was like, do you know what you're signing up for? Because I can only have, you know, a little person, if you're going to be fully vested in this process with me, like I'm not the mom that's going to be doing all the things and you're going to be the dad that's like, I don't know, couch surfing and watching every sports episode on TV and cable.
Every straight woman's fear, go on.
Little did I know my husband would end up being the better parent between the two of us. But, when I had my baby, we actually went through the process of having this conversation around, you know, I wanted to go natural, not because I felt pressure from like all the conversations about like what's best, but I had just had knee surgery. Like I had had an arthroscopy. And for those of y'all who know or don't know, they put two tiny little like slits in your knee, like maybe the size of a buttonhole. And I never fully recovered from that surgery. Like my knees, oh, even now, 15 years later, it's a little wobbly. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I have end up with a C-section and I'm cut open from here, you know, hip one to hip two, what if I don't heal? And I think I just-
I'm open all the time.
I had this fear. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to have surgery. And my brother is an anesthesiologist. And he was like, you're crazy. Okay, those were not his words, but he really tried to talk me out of the natural route. He's like, why do you always have to make things difficult? But we had
a sibling.
An older sibling who has to tell you what to do and have a fight with you right before you go into labor.
I'm glad, though, he told you you didn't have to do it that way, because my experience with a lot of men in my life, or people also that don't have children, was telling me that I should do it natural. And I was like, that is something that you may not know about or experience. And it's kind of a personal choice. So I'm glad you made that personal, whatever personal choice you did, you were making it for yourself.
Yes, because it's literally nobody else's business.
Yes. So I had a doula. We were all super excitable. I think I started contractions like at 10 p.m. And I think my labor was a sum total of 12 hours, but I didn't go to the hospital until like 6 a.m. And then I was only there for about 4 hours before I had my baby.
That's fast.
That is fast. A lot of babies here are born at St. David's. Did you deliver at St. David's?
I was at St. David's North. And it's funny, in retrospect, my OB-GYN said that, you know, all my patients come in saying they're going to go natural, but you are my only one this month.
This month.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. I never knew. She didn't believe me the whole time. But it was funny because my water didn't break at all. My doula had to like help me get it to break naturally. And then I just remember I had my glasses on when I was delivering and everything was foggy and I didn't realize it was I thought I was just having this like otherworldly, like, you know,
hallucination.
Yeah,
just like covered in steam and mist from like the breathing, the hotness, the sweatiness,
the sweat.
They're like, yeah. No, that's the placenta on there. No, I'm joking.
And so my baby came out and the doctor held Misha up. And I was so tired. I was like, give her to her dad. I just I don't want to have anything to do with her. I was like, I'm tired. Leave her alone.
She's like, I need a nap. I did all the work. You're welcome. Dad's there to take care of you. Yeah.
See you in a minute.
And so, you know, we were in the hospital for a couple of days. It was a little crazy because my daughter had jaundice. And then we ended up having to go back to the NICU. And I was, you know, I was really lucky because I was trying to breastfeed. And so I got to like room in and like stay at the hospital where like a lot of people don't get to do that. And I don't understand why that's even an option for mommies and babies, especially for newborns to be separated, but whole other conversation. And then it was unlike anything I've ever done in my life, probably the most humbling experience. You know, transformational, the body changes so much. That's one. But your life changes so much, right? There's like a very clear before and after.
Yeah.
And, you know, I run like couple million dollar projects, like huge projects. I've worked on things that were like 150, 200 people. And this little 8-pound ball of fluff destroyed me. Like I couldn't control anything. And, you know, like there was a moment there, but ultimately I guess I'll just end by saying motherhood is not what I expected because there is no expectation. Everybody's experience is different.
Yeah.
And so I think I just talked for a whole long mess of words here, but, you know, I'm glad for me that it was an intentional route as much as possible, because you can't have control over everything. But that like our paths are our paths, and to like embrace them. And so I'll leave it there.
I have mechanical questions. Like, how does one get one's water broken?
They poked mine with a thing.
Did they really?
Yeah, and they broke it.
Did it hurt?
No, because you can't feel anything. I don't know. I had drugs, so I'm not like Muna queen over here. Did you feel it, Muna?
Well, no, I didn't feel anything, but I also didn't get poked. Like my doula had me get in the shower on all fours and she turned the water on really hot. Uh-huh. And had to do this kind of, imagine just side to side rocking motion, but it's like a really awkward rocking motion because you know you're like, you know, out to here pregnant.
Major pregnant.
And I think it's just think about like if you had like a balloon and you're trying to like pop it, like you're just trying to like put some pressure and squeeze. And my water broke and it sounded like someone threw like a jar on the floor and it exploded.
No,
like,
oh shit.
That's so scary. Cool.
Like really you could even tell in the shower that it was like, whoosh.
Like a huge water balloon went off. That's so cool. I really want to see someone else's birth like live. Because during mine, I was in labor for 31 hours and I wore 31 hours total from when I started until when I finished.
Where did this happen?
So here's the thing about Santi is they were like, you're already a week overdue. He's getting too big for you. We're going to induce you Monday morning. And Saturday night into Sunday, I started to go into labor. And then I went to the hospital the next night, at 7:30 or something. And then he was born the next morning at 8. And so they didn't have to induce me because they were like, I guess he's coming on his own time. But I was like walking in the neighborhood, doing everything I could to get the little guy to come out. Cause I was not a happy pregnant person. I remember telling my partner, Manuel, like the last few weeks, I was like, if I ever tell you that I want to have another child, you are to tell me absolutely not, because this is torture. Like I'm so uncomfortable. I can't sleep. I can't walk. I can't breathe. I can't poop. Like nothing is working. God. It's all terrible. And so anyway, after all the hours of labor with Santi, I'm terrified of blood. And so I wore an eye mask the entire time I was pushing, and I totally did drugs because I am not as tough as Muna. And I told the doctors, I was like, whatever you do, don't tell me how close he is or anything like that. Just tell me when to push. I don't want to know anything because I will freak out. And I was like training myself to breathe so I wouldn't cry or like get emotional or anything. And then they were like, he's here. Do you want to hold him? And I pulled off my mask and I remember he was like this little thing and I just picked him up and I didn't cry at all. I thought I was going to like bawl, but I was so exhausted. Like I couldn't force any emotion. And then I heard, and Santi wasn't crying at all, but Manuel was bawling, like bawling so loud, like, I love you both. I'm so proud of you, my son and you. I'm so proud. And I was like, keep it together. Me and Santi are okay. And he was just so, so cute. And I don't know, like, I couldn't believe he was real for a long time. I will say, as soon as he came out and I looked down at him and saw what he looked like, immediately my brain said, oh my gosh, I wonder what the next one would look like. Like I had that like I had hated being pregnant. So I was like, wow, it's kind of incredible that your brain does that.
It's a trick.
It's gone that fast.
My placenta wasn't even out. It was just like him. And I was like, huh, I wonder what the next one could be like. But it was, I feel like all of the changes really came afterwards, but that was so fun to see him and like get to meet him. And when I look at who he was then and who he is now, like, thank God there's pictures, because there is no way I would remember how he looks, because it is so transformative, this little time period. But it was really, really a crazy wild time. And then the last thing I'm going to say is the most wild thing for me was the transformation he's gone through, but also the transformation your body goes through. Muna, you've heard her say on other shows that like the first time she saw me, like was all she could see was breasts, because they got so big. I literally thought, I like called the doctor. I was like, can my skin explode? Like, cause it was like hard as a table and they were like up to my collarbone. I'm not joking. Like
people had pay good money for
ice
that.
Packs everywhere on them. I was like, this isn't even like porn star. This is beyond. I was like terrified for my skin. I really, really was. So Muna, you didn't even see
they were magnificent after your milk came in. So I don't even know what it must have been like that morning.
It was like, and my skin was so hot. Like they're like, oh, you get bigger. But no, like my skin was so hot, hard as a rock. And I literally thought like it could tear open and like milk would fly everywhere is how hard it was. Oh my God.
That sounds awful and painful.
Yeah. So you got to avoid that. So that's pretty cool, Martha.
Yeah. My body suffered nothing except sleep deprivation later. So Joe and I had talked about wanting to make a family. And of course, as a queer family, that requires intention. And a lot of our friends have used donors, both known and unknown donors, to carry their own, to carry biological kids. And I just always, like from when I was little, I always knew that adoption would be the way that my family was formed. It just felt like that was for sure going to be our way. And so we had been together not that long, like a year and a half, probably. And Joe's mom called. She was pulled over on the side of the highway. And like, we were not like pursuing becoming parents at this point. But she was pulled over on the side of the highway and she goes, honey, I have found your baby. And Joe was like, mother, you're totally nuts. I'll talk to you later. And she called back and she was like, no, your niece's friend is pregnant and she needs to place this baby. And Courtney's told her about you guys and Mackenzie wants to meet you. And like for a split second, Joe was like, mom, like hang up the phone. That's bananas. And I was like, well, wait a second. This never happens. We're a queer couple in Texas and we are being like, the universe is telling us, yo, your kid is coming. And we had our first phone call with Mackenzie. We were sitting on the patio at Matzel Rancho. And you know, she's young. She has a kid. River's brother is a year and a half older. So he was tiny then. And we just talked and she invited us to come to her next doctor's appointment. And we had thought, like, this was August, and we had thought that, okay, so she's due in like January, February. Great. Let's go to College Station. Let's meet Mackenzie. Let's see what this is all about. And so we go, I think, the next week to her.
How did that feel? Like, when you were on your way, like, I'm trying to imagine, so intense. Like, for me, like, I got 9 months to prepare emotionally of like, oh, this person, I'm going to, like, wow, like, to go and be like, oh, I'm going to meet this person's
mind. Yeah, because we were not well educated on the ways of adoption at that point. We knew very little about, like, there's a lawyer in town named Suzanne Bryant who has legitimized every queer family in this city for years and years and years. She's wonderful. We called Suzanne and she talked us through like the legal aspects, which my brain is always interested in how the mechanics of a thing work. Joe's heart is always interested in how the emotions of a thing work. And so together we sort of work that puzzle, but it feels really intense, Christina. It's like a first date, but like the most important first date of your life. Because we knew enough about adoption that we wanted to have an open adoption, which means that we maintain the relationship with the birth family to the extent that both of us are willing and able to do so. And so—
And this was someone you had never met before.
No, we'd never met her.
How did your mom meet this person?
That's a different show.
Okay.
Joe's mom. She was Mackenzie and Joe's niece were neighbors in College Station.
And thank you, Christina. That was the question I was asking.
Yeah.
Because I don't differentiate between—
We're a team.
Yeah. And so on one hand, Christina, you bring up this point of having 9 months to adjust, but on the other hand, I sit there and I think going with someone else to a pregnancy appointment for adoption, like that's a instant level of intimacy and trust.
Big time. And so when we get to College Station, we walk into the doctor's office and Mackenzie walks in and she's like tiny. Her belly is tiny. She's young. She's adorable. She's like, we look at it and we're like, oh, she's probably like not even due till March. She's so tiny. And we do, we go into the appointment with her and like, has her belly exposed and they're doing the sonogram. And the doctor looks at us and he says, well, and it is weird to be a queer couple in College Station when the doctor has the little pro-life feeties on his lapel and just like trying to figure out like what the politics of this scenario are going to be. Like, that was a very edgy moment. He was actually really kind to us, I will say. But he looks at us and he says, well, I hope y'all have your nursery ready. She's 3 centimeters dilated.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
We're like, what?
Had you already signed paperwork at that point?
No.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's like this crazy. This is the best like family beginning movie. Like, you know, like I'm thinking of like, I guess the only movie that's coming to mind is like, Look Who's Talking to You, or Look Who's Talking, you know, the baby. It's like, oh my God, crazy. The baby's here. What do we do?
This
is like the queer version of all of those like baby family movies where the baby comes in and like no one was like, oh my God, it's so crazy and unexpected, we're excited.
Yeah.
imagining like the Macaulay Culkin Home Alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, can we please turn this into like a queer family
movie? We totally can. Joe's holding
Aiden in the background.
This is how this goes. No, Joe was holding Aiden, who's River's brother, and her arms started shaking and she handed Aiden to me and we looked at each other and we were like we didn't have money saved. We didn't have a diaper. We were not ready. We were not ready to do anything. And so he says, she's going to go into labor anytime. And so we went back to Austin and like, started talking, telling all of our friends what was happening, walking our family through it, getting people prepared, but still like never made it to the store. We were at brunch with our dear friends at their house, and Joe's mom calls and she says, "He's here, he's here, he's here." And we had had a bottle of tequila the night before and named him River Bingham.
I love his name also.
Thank you. Yeah. And we like just started shaking. It was, I don't know if you guys remember when, but when the Bastrop fires were happening in Austin, like Bastrop caught on fire. It was all, it was very, very dramatic, but it was that weekend. And we went to College Station. By the time we arrived at Joe's mom's house, she had gotten us a car seat and like all of the little baby necessities that we would need. And we went to the hospital, like in my little Subaru with his car seat in the car, and walked into this room to see Mackenzie, who we had met one time, Trey, who we'd also met, that's River's birth dad, and Aiden. And she looks at me and she hands this baby to me and says, "Are you ready to meet your mamas?"
Oh my God.
And like, it, that moment changed everything, everything.
Can I ask some questions?
Yeah, you can ask any questions.
Like, I see Muna, because it's just like, as a mom, like just imagining like, wow, it's such a like huge, huge moment. And obviously I don't know Mackenzie, but you know, there's like, I believe that children pick their parents, but in this instance, it also sounds like River's birth mom picked y'all. And that's like so powerful. Like they both picked y'all.
Yeah.
That's like so incredible. So like, how does that, I guess, how did that feel in that moment?
It started to feel okay. So
once the baby one of the things
that we learned later about adoption is that, like she didn't hand us her motherhood. She handed us our motherhood, but she will always be his mother. She nurtured him. She brought him, safely here. And so she's always his mom. So that is something that I didn't understand, but we don't become parents until we leave the hospital with the child as adoptive, parents. Like, so he wasn't ours yet, right? He was collectively, but then when we left the hospital with him, like I didn't sleep for days. I would just stand and watch him sleep and like put my hand on his chest and make sure he's breathing. And it was the feeling of like falling in love with this tiny little human being that I still can't get enough of him. I wish he would show me his eyes because he's got so much hair in them right now. But like, it was, I never could have imagined the transformation. And I can't fully appreciate, because my body has never been through it, but I cannot fully appreciate what Mackenzie went through to hand him to us and trust us with him. She loves him as much as any of us do and has from the beginning. So I will say that it's a really expansive relationship that we have. And we see Mackenzie now every week. When River was tiny, we would visit them. And there's like a magnet in them to each other. Like there's an undeniable connection that you can just see. We could see it before there were words. And I think it's true for him with us too, but like there's something very important there.
It makes me think about when we think of, you know, shapes, right? Like a dot is one dimension. A line is two dimensions. If you think about a cube, that's three dimensions. And I think people have talked about what a fourth or fifth or whatever dimension is, but then like listening to your story and I think about love, we have such a limited, very basic definition of love. And your story tells me that love is so much more expansive than we ever considered, in ways that maybe we don't even realize until we're presented with just how magnificent it could be. And then even then, I feel like perhaps your story only scratches the surface. Like I am so blown away by hearing that.
I know. I feel so many things. Like both you and I got teary-eyed. Like I was just imagining you like sitting at the edge of his little, I don't know, crib and just watching him. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I felt that, but like, I think it's in some ways, like it's just a different kind of magic. Mm-hmm. That you were watching him and looking over him and loving this person and being like, I don't know. This is the feeling. It's like, I always look at Santi when he's sleeping and be like, I can't believe I get to be your mom. Thank you for picking me.
Yeah.
Only totally. Like amplified because like he picked you and she and his mom picked you and like in a more very precise way that is like so profoundly giving. Mm-hmm. That it's like, what a gift that you were given someone's.
It's, baby. I mean, it's unimaginable. Yeah. I was given motherhood. I was handed twice by two women who I could not possibly admire more. I mean, they're really extraordinary. And they're in the adoption world, we talk about biology and biography. We will never be their biology. Like that just doesn't happen. And so one legacy of the old way of adoption is that kids that were adopted look around and they don't know who they belong to in terms of biology. And our hope is that then our kids won't have to wonder that. They have that relationship. Towns FaceTimes with Hannah, her birth mom, all of the time. Hannah lives in Chicago right now. But these bonds between them and that relationship really are not deniable. They're very profound.
I think that's so beautiful that you all are able to keep that. I know not everyone can, but that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It feels like for each one of us, like I know Muna, you said you weren't like, you know, you weren't in your mind gonna be like perfect mom, right? Like that wasn't who you thought you were, even though like now you are a pretty perfect mom. Like you're a role model to me as far as like, oh, I want to be like Muna, you know?
Me too.
But I feel like I've changed so much. I always think about like the person I was before and the person that Santi made me, and like, does he even know like what a big deal he is like to my life, you know, is what I think. I'm like, dude, you're like magic in a little four-year-old body that like I can never thank enough for every way you've profoundly like amplified and grown my heart. I am the biggest sap. I cry at everything now, like because I can feel things. I feel like I've said it before, like I feel like I lived in black and white and then Santi made everything in color and 3D.
So sweet.
Martha, thinking about your story, in the Muslim faith, we believe that one of the paths to heaven is under your mother's feet. But then for you, there's this additional piece of having adopted, like there's all these sayings about what it means to take care of or adopt a child, and that like the one that's coming to me right now is like the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam would say that like the one who took care of an orphan and I will be like this together in heaven, right? And so for a Muslim, it's like, is there anything better, right? So you have this sort of like, I don't know if you want to call it a double whammy, triple whammy, whatever, right? Like, it's so beautiful. But then I sit there and I think, and you know, hopefully this isn't a simplification, but of course a queer couple wouldn't limit what love looks like and what relationships would look like and what family could look like the way that, you know, I think folks who are cis and also folks who are maybe in these very limited lanes of what religion gives us, right? There, we don't challenge, like these norms are just set. These boxes are set. And I think that is something we could all learn from hugely.
It's, I do think that the queerness predisposes us to define family and love bigger. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think that that's part of it. And in Joe's family, like, they didn't all have the same blood, and they had a very expansive definition of family. And it just, like, we are capable of holding so much space and love and joy in our hearts, and grief too. There's a huge piece of grief to adoption too. But like, all of those things come in the package together. And we are lucky, like our kids saying that the path to heaven is under the mother's feet. Our kids have like four moms because they're so close to each other's birth moms that it's like these kids have some moms to walk under.
Your story is so beautiful that I feel a little sheepish saying this, but when I brought Misha home, she didn't eat. And because she didn't eat, she didn't sleep.
Oh.
Because she didn't eat or sleep, she was crying all the time. And then I think it was, I got whatever mastitis on like my third month. And then it was like a tropical fever. And like, that was the first time I slept through the night. But because I had this like horrible fever and just somebody would bring me the baby, I'd nurse and the baby would leave. But I loved my baby, but I didn't like my baby for the first couple months. It was a very, very difficult time for me, very difficult time for me. And so I'm always really happy to hear, you know, like Christina, you talking about just being so excited to meet your little person, right? And like this really beautiful story that you talked about, Martha, because, you know, of course, everyone's story is their own, but a lot of people talk about birth like, oh, you're going to have a baby and the clouds are going to part and the sun's going to come out and there's going to be this choir and angels singing and everything's going to be amazing. And like when I was pregnant, I didn't have any feelings about it. It was literally just a fact. I'm pregnant. Like everybody else is excited. Not me, not so much, right? And then I had the baby and like, okay, the baby's here. I'm tired. Go to your dad. Like, it wasn't some glamorous story. And, you know, of course, I feel like I have to keep saying it. Like, I love my kids. I'm happy that my kids are here. But, I had to do a lot of work, like, emotionally to get into a place because I already wasn't comfortable with kids. And I think I was just really afraid I was going to screw them up.
Yeah. Well, and I think everybody has a different experience with all of the different parts of it. And like, no, there's no right or wrong to it. It just is. And like these little fully formed humans come to us, like Carrie was saying last week, it like they come as our teachers. And I'm sorry that yours brought mastitis, because that's rude.
Taught you a lot about that. Probably didn't know much about that.
But before. We know how much you love her. We see her and we see how proud you are of her. That just, you know, she's incredible. It's incredible. I remember being totally floored by how much shit I could carry when I became a mom, because I would pick up like 15 bags and the car seat. And I was like, this is crazy. I can carry more than I ever knew. And I think that that is both true physically and like spiritually and emotionally when we started carrying all of the stuff.
Yeah. Motherhood is definitely a lot to carry. There's also so much to pour into, right? And I think Christina, you said it before where you said you discovered a chamber of your heart that you never had before.
Yeah. That I didn't know existed. I've lots of chambers in there. Little Santi's taught me lots.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll end and just share that when Jibril was born, Samir and I were actually arguing and I was like, I'm going to the hospital by myself. And my sister was like, okay, calm down. I like, he was early. I hadn't even packed my bag. So I was like in my room rummaging around, trying to like put stuff in my bag. And then I have to stop and squat and breathe. Because
by the way, once you're having contractions, you're totally thinking straight, clearly making sound decisions.
Sure. Going to the hospital by myself. And they tried to put me in a triage room when I got there. And I was like, my baby's coming right now. Like, I thought I was in labor for like 20 hours or something. I think it was like 45 minutes.
Seriously?
I couldn't stand up. I was so tired. I don't know if maybe I was just really mad at Samir, but like Jibril came out so fast and he hit his head on my pelvis and he had this cone head. He doesn't have a cone head anymore. But like Carrie said, right? Like they're already whole and complete and in there. And it is really a gift to be mothers, right? To these beautiful people and a huge responsibility. And I think having kids makes me care way more, not just about the world, but about the legacy we're leaving. And so thank you to both of y'all for being in conversation, because building this world for all of our kids is super important. And, you know, I think the three of us embody caring about all of the children and all of the families at the table, not just our own. And I really appreciate that about both of you and love that energy is with me and in the world.
Same.